So today we're going to talk about Trump. Now, I don't want to get you guys confused. We're not going to be talking about a certain political figure that's on the news quite often. We're not talking about that Trump. So it's okay. You can let your guard down. I'm not going to be talking about politics today. I'm talking about a different kind of Trump. You ever played a card game where there's a certain card that's maybe more powerful than all the other cards? You're hoping that when the cards get dealt out, you get the Trump. There's a game that I played before. You guys ever played a game named Rook? So this is an interesting game. It's a game that is quite a bit of fun. There's a lot of strategy to Rook. And it's a game, like, when you look at the cards, they're really quite simple. They're just numbers and colors. That's all they are. And so in this game, maybe you're playing with four people. Someone leads out. And maybe they want to lead out with a black four. And they lead out with a black four. And once they lead out with a black four, everybody else has to play black. And there's certain cards that are point cards. And you're hoping that by once everybody goes around and plays their card and no one else has, a higher card, then somebody wins that hand. I'm not going to go through all the rules, but somebody wins that hand and they get the points from that hand. Whoever has the highest numbered card in black can get that hand, and they get the points from that hand. You want to get as many points as you can to win the game. But there are other cards that you can get, and there is one of these colors could end up being Trump. You bid on the hand thinking if you can win the hand, you bid on the hand in terms of how many points you can get. And if you win the bid, you get to choose which color is Trump. So let's say red is Trump. So even though you're supposed to be playing black cards, whoever has the highest black cards wins the hand. If you have a Trump card and you throw it down, it doesn't matter. Maybe it's your Trump card is 2, and 2 is a fairly low number, but you throw the Trump card down, and it beats everything else. Trump just beats everything else. And so you're wanting to have lots of Trump cards in your hand to be able to win. In Rook as well, you can play partners. Who here has ever played partners Rook? Maybe a couple. You play with like four people, and oftentimes it's like, you can play partners, but you have a secret partner. You don't even know who your partner is until they start laying down your cards. You're trying to figure out who your partner is. So if you win the bid, and then you get to choose Trump, you can also choose who your partner is by saying, my partner is going to be, let's say, 2 of red, the Trump. That's going to be my partner. And you're hoping that whoever your partner is has more Trump than you in their hand. You hope that they have a lot of Trump, because if you and your partner have a lot of Trump, you're just going to win the game. So you want this Trump. You know, when I think of the life of Jesus, and when he was dealing with the religious leaders of his day and everything that he dealt with, Jesus was the one who was holding all the Trump cards. In his life, it looked like he was, at times, when you look at it, it looked like he was behind the eight ball. It looked like the religious leaders, looked like the leaders of the day had all the Trump cards on him. But in reality, Jesus was the one that was holding the Trump. When we look at the life of Jesus, and if you can look at it like playing a Rook game, you want to be partnered with Jesus. If you figure you have some Trump cards in your hand, you're hoping that your partner has even more than that. Jesus is the one who's holding the Trump cards. We just sang that song that Rock was singing, "There Ain't No Grave That Can Hold My Body Down." When they killed Jesus, when they crucified him on the cross, they thought they had him down. They didn't realize that Jesus had a Trump card up his sleeve. And when they killed Jesus, he threw that Trump card down, didn't he? He threw that Trump card down. He said, "No, you think you have won." Death in the grave and Satan thought that they had won. And he threw that Trump card down. He says, uh-uh-uh. This game ain't quite over yet. And as we're singing that song, I was I was also thinking, you know, in life, there are circumstances that we go through in life where it feels like we are losing. But if we've partnered with Jesus, he has some trump cards for us. Maybe it doesn't feel like you have any trump in your hand. And you've come to the end of the hand and it looks like you're going to lose. It looks like they're going to get all the points. But Jesus has a trump card for you, even when it seems like you're going to lose. I'm going to go through some verses here today where Jesus was trumping people. We're going to be looking at Mark chapter 7. We're going to go from verse 1 to 23. So we're going to have to get through this quickly. There's quite a few verses. It says this: one day some Pharisees and teachers of religious law arrived from Jerusalem to see Jesus. They noticed that some of his disciples failed to follow the Jewish ritual of hand washing before eating. The Jews, especially the Pharisees, do not eat until they have poured water over their cupped hands, as required by their ancient traditions. Similarly, they don't eat anything from the market until they've immersed their hands in water. This is but one of many traditions they have clung to, such as their ceremonial washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles. So the Pharisees and teachers of religious law asked him, "Why don't your disciples follow our age-old tradition? They eat without first performing the hand-washing ceremony." Jesus replied, "You hypocrites." That's a harsh statement, hey? "You hypocrites. Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you, for he wrote, 'These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Their worship is a farce, for they teach man-made ideas as commands from God.'" Here we have a quality control situation happening. The religious leaders are coming up to Jesus where he's teaching and preaching in Galilee. They come from the head center of Jerusalem. It's kind of like, you know, if you were to own a Tim Hortons or a McDonald's and you have like your chain restaurants, you buy a McDonald's, you buy a Tim Hortons, And the people from the head office are going to come and they're going to check out what you're doing to make sure that you're abiding by the principles of McDonald's and Tim Hortons, making sure you're cooking those burgers, frying those fries, making that coffee the way it's supposed to be done. And this is what's happening here. Jesus, he's a teacher, he's a rabbi, and he's traveling around. And the top religious leaders, they're coming in from Jerusalem. They're making sure that Jesus is abiding by what they think he should be doing. Are you teaching the way you should be teaching? Are you doing what you should be doing, Jesus? And they come and they see, oh man, Jesus' disciples, they're not doing what they should be doing. They're not washing their hands the way they should be washing their hands. They're able to point out something that Jesus and his disciples aren't doing, which they think that they should do. And Jesus pulls out a bit of a trump card. He's able to see right through what they're doing. You see, they were really caught up in this aspect of ceremonial washing of hands. This wasn't about dirt. So what would often happen within the Jewish culture of that time is they would wash their hands to get the dirt off of their hands. And after they would do that, then they would go through a ceremonial washing, and it could be quite elaborate. They would allow the water to drip down from their elbows down to their hands, and they do it from their hands down to their elbows. And it wasn't about washing off dirt. It was a ceremonial thing that they did before they would eat. And this stemmed from an original ancient command that came through Moses from Mount Sinai to the people of Israel. It had to do with the rules and regulations for priests in the tabernacle, in the temple. So as the priests would enter into the tabernacle, there was a wash basin that was there. And before they would enter in the tabernacle, the priests would have to wash their hands and their feet. And it was a symbol of them purifying themselves before God. It didn't actually purify them, but it was a physical act to symbolize the purification of the heart before God. Don't come and stand before God with an impure heart. It's a physical representation of something. So God had commanded the priest to do that. Well, you know what happens in religion over time? As time goes by, it, you know, one thing leads to another, and the religious leaders are teaching, well, everybody should do this, and it develops not just about entering the tabernacle or the temple. It's not just priests. It's everybody, and before you eat, you need to be doing this. And this religious principle just develops over time, and people are just doing it, and they think that I have to do this. This is something that we need to do. In Judaism, they had an oral law and they had a written law, a traditional law. So what we have in the Old Testament is the written law. That's what we have. But over time, what developed was also oral laws. They would read the written law and they would expand on it. And it was oral. It was passed down from person to person to person, just orally. Well, over time, they end up writing it down. And so what ended up happening is what they would do is they elevated this oral kind of tradition with God's commandment in the Old Testament. In fact, what ended up happening at this point in time is that oftentimes they would make the oral law or their traditions even above what God was commanding in the Old Testament. That became more important to them than what you see written in the Old Testament. Jesus starts speaking into this situation. He's like, man, you guys have it all wrong. You're so caught up in making sure that you're following these like religious traditions that are, yeah, there was a connection piece back here, but you've blown it way out of proportion. You're so caught up with making sure you do this, you're not like, you're missing the whole point. Your heart's not in this. The point originally was that this would point towards the fact of having a pure heart. Your guys' hearts aren't pure at all. You're just worried about making sure that you follow this religious tradition. It's interesting. You see this actually even played out in a story that the disciple John talks about at the beginning of Jesus' ministry as he gathered his disciples. You know the story about Jesus turning water into wine? He's at a wedding. They run out of wine, and it's kind of like, you know, it's looking bad on the groom and the bride, and Jesus' mom, Mary, comes up to him and says, Jesus, can you, like, do something? Like, can you help us here? Like, nudge, nudge. Come on, Jesus. Like, we know you can do it. Like, can you just help us here? It's really, really fascinating because what John tells us is that he takes ceremonial washing jugs. So what these are these really large jugs that were used exactly for this purpose. They filled them with water, and it was a purified water. Like maybe the priest would pray over it or whatever. It was considered holy water, and they would take that water out of those ceremonial washing jugs, and they do their thing before they eat. Jesus is the one who takes these ceremonial washing jugs. And he's like, yeah, take those jugs, let's fill them with water, and then he turns them into wine. It doesn't stick out to us today, but like in that time period, for that, Jesus is desecrating these things. He's desecrating them. These ceremonial washing jugs that Jesus used to produce wine were used for nothing else but ceremonial washing. And the religious people of that time would have looked at what Jesus did and going like, oh my goodness, look what he's doing. Look what he's doing. He's using these like ceremonial washing jars that are just supposed to like purify us, and now he's filling them with wine. He was desecrating these things. Jesus didn't care. He's like, you guys have your religious traditions, but like, man, they're not doing any good because your hearts are just so dark. A really strict Jew would do this before he ate, but he'd also do it in the middle of his meal too. So they'd wash their hands, go through that whole thing, they'd stop in the middle, and they'd do it again if he didn't get it right the first time. History shows that one Jewish rabbi failed to go through the ceremonial washing, and he was excommunicated. Can you imagine that? He was excommunicated because he kind of like didn't do it. In fact, there's another story that's written in history where there's this Jewish rabbi and he was thrown in jail by the Romans. And every day they would give the prisoners a ration of water. Here's your ration of water today, you know, in a jar or whatever. And this Jewish rabbi was so caught up with this is that he used his ration of water to make sure he went through his ceremonial washing of his hands. And history shows the guy almost died because of it. He almost died of thirst because he valued making sure that he went through this religious ritual before he actually gave himself water to drink. And this guy was celebrated as a hero. His sacrifice that he made in jail, make sure he went through ceremony washing, was like they lifted this guy up. He's a national hero. He's a national hero for making sure that he did this. When we see this story, what sticks out to me is that Jesus values heart. Heart trumps tradition. Jesus throws down his trump card and he says, like, hey, there's nothing wrong with tradition. But man, I'm more interested in your heart and what's going on here. So if you're making sure that you're doing all these religious rituals just out of the fact of doing it, you think that's more important than what's going on in your heart, you have it all wrong. What's going on in here, this trumps tradition. It makes me wonder, like, what traditions do we uphold that get in the way of truly being able for our hearts to be in the right place? What traditions do we uphold that get in the way of people's needs? You know, it's really, really, I look at this and it's like, this is so ancient. This is like 2,000 years ago, and we read it and we go like, we don't relate to this at all. You know, when you guys walk in the church, there's no like bronze basin there, some like holy water that I've sprinkled and prayed over for you guys to wash. There's nothing like that. So we read this and we don't relate to it. And sometimes I think within the like a modern church like today, we go, well, we don't have any traditions. We're really modern. I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that. Of course we have traditions. There's certain things. There's certain ways that we do church. There's certain ways that we do worship. There's certain ways that we just do what we do that becomes tradition. Certain ways that we dress, whatever it is. And it's really easy even for us to like raise that up and be like, this is the way you have to do it. This is the way you have to do church. This is the way you have to dress. This is the way you have to read the Bible. This is the way you have to pray. This is how we, you know. And it has nothing to do with what Jesus has taught us. It's just kind of like we've taken what Jesus has taught, and over time we've developed traditions. And there's nothing wrong with our traditions. Traditions are great. But I think Jesus speaks into this, and he's like, man, if your traditions are getting in the way of people's needs, it's time to tear down those traditions. Jesus is like, let's fill them with wine. Totally desecrating them, you know? And he uses this word hypocrite. He's like, man, you guys are a bunch of hypocrites. This is a very common word for us, but that word, original word, really meant like actor. You guys are a bunch of actors. The hypocrite was someone who worked in the art of theater. That's what a hypocrite was. Now we see it as a very negative thing. We label people, you're a hypocrite, referring to like you say one thing and do another. But a hypocrite was just an actor. They put on a mask and they came out and they played a role. And I think if Jesus was to use modern language, it's like, you guys are a bunch of actors. You're playing a part. You look really religious and you wash your hands and it looks all nice and good, but man, you guys, like, in reality, it's like when you go home, your hearts are so dark. Hearts are so dark. Let's move on. Let's look at verse 8. Jesus continues. He says, "For you ignore God's law and substitute your own tradition." And he said, "You skillfully sidestep God's law in order to hold on to your own tradition. For instance, Moses gave you this law from God, honor your father and mother. And anyone who speaks disrespectfully of father and mother must be put to death." Well, that's a harsh sentence, isn't it? Kids, you need to listen to that. Be thankful. I don't think I'd be around today. But you say it's all right for people to say to their parents, "Sorry, I can't help you, for I vowed to give to God what I would have given to you." In this way, you let them disregard their needy parents, and so you cancel the word of God in order to hand down your own tradition. And this is only one example among many others. So they had this tradition that had developed over time. It was called Corban. And I think actually the original like heart of the tradition was probably really, really good. It was this aspect of saying, man, I have these financial resources, and I'm going to dedicate them to God. It's called Corban. I'm going to dedicate this to God. God has given me this house, this money, this job, this whatever, and I have these financial resources, and God, they're yours. I'm going to dedicate them to you. But what ended up developing over time is you have situations where, like, people, maybe they don't have the greatest relationship with their parents. And unlike today, you know, in today's society, you know, we retire, and we have our, like, CPP, and we have our pensions, and, like, generally, like, society, Canadian society takes care of us, right? We have care homes, care facilities that, like, if you can't take care of yourself, the government places you, the government pays for it. There's all this stuff. Many countries in the world today, similar to this, man, their pension plan was their kids. You know, they didn't have enough money to save up for, like, retirement. There was no such thing as, like, your RRSPs and CPP and all that. We really rely upon that today. In the early church, I mean, people relied upon their kids. In fact, you know, there's all these stories about in the early church, you have these widows that are part of the early church. And the early church was there to take care of the widows and the orphans. Why? Because there's no one else to take care of them. So the early church, they gathered their resources together to take care of the widows and orphans because there's no government situation to take care of them. And this is what's going on, is that people are like, you know, there's this thing of taking care of their parents in their old age. You are their pension plan. And these people are like, man, I don't like my parents. And they take this religious tradition, and they're like, you know what, I've dedicated all my extra resources. I'm giving it to God. Sorry, Mom and Dad, I don't have anything left for you. Because I've dedicated it to God. And it sounds really like, really religious and like such a good thing to do. I'm going to dedicate my resources to God. And Jesus looks in it and goes like, man, you guys are a bunch of idiots. You guys look like you're so religious. But like what you're doing is you're taking religious tradition as an excuse not to take care of the needs of people who are sitting right in front of you. You're ignoring the command of God to honor your father and mother so you can just do what you want to do. What you want to do. The needs of the people trump religious tradition. The needs of the people trump religious tradition. And once again, like it makes you go, okay, what about today? What things do we do where we kind of are able to like make excuses in our heart to really not take care of the needs of people because of our religious tradition? If there are religious traditions that we have in this church, the way we do church, the way we live out our lives that are standing in the way of meeting the needs of people, those things need to be torn down. They really do. Well, we've done it this way all the way along. This is how we do church. This is how we do worship. This is how we make up. This is how, and it seems really religious. But Jesus is like, man, but what about the needs of those people over there? And that's something that we really need. I think as a church, we constantly need to wrestle with. It's not something that you do once. It's just something that we constantly have to be wrestling with. As a church is saying, God, is there anything that's standing in the way of meeting the needs of people? And it just ends up being kind of our interpretation of how we need to live out our spiritual lives. What is standing in the way? Let's continue. This next part's really interesting. Verse 14 to 23. It says, "Then Jesus called to the crowd to come in here. All you listen, he said, and try to understand. It's not what goes into your body that defiles you. You're defiled by what comes from your heart. Then Jesus went into a house to get away from the crowd. His disciples followed after him. They asked him what he meant by the parable he just used." They're like, whoa, Jesus, we need to talk about this. Can you imagine what happened? Like, I mean, he's out in the crowd and just kind of makes this statement. It's not what you eat. It's not what defiles you. It's what comes out of your heart. And the disciples are following up to Jesus. You need to clarify this because I'm really confused right now. "Don't you understand either?" he asked. "Can't you see that the food you put into your body cannot defile you? Food doesn't go into your heart, but only passes through your stomach and then goes into the sewer." That's a nice way of saying it. "By saying this, he declared that every kind of food is acceptable in God's eyes. And then he added, it's what comes from inside that defiles you. For within, out of a person's heart, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, wickedness, deceit, lustful desires, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. All these vile things come from within. They are what defile you." This is huge. Like, we read this today, it doesn't really hit us quite as hard, but I mean, Jesus is really saying something quite revolutionary. So up until this point, Jesus is really speaking up against their own human traditions. He's like, man, your traditions are getting in the way of certain things here, and you need to tear down these traditions. Jesus takes it a step further and really starts speaking against what God had originally given them. He's speaking against the word of God. Speaking against the words that God had given them. These are the things you need to do. You need to stay away from this food and this food and this food. Don't eat pork. Don't eat shrimp. Don't eat crab. Don't eat these types of animals. This is the way you need to be killing them. This is the way you need to be cooking them. This is the way you need to be eating them. And for them at this time, this was so incredibly important. These very disciples who weren't washing their hands and following the traditions got in trouble from the religious leaders. Now Jesus is speaking directly into their heart and something that's incredibly important to them. If I'm going to honor God, I'm going to really be careful about what I eat. That pork that like those Romans are eating, I'm never going to touch that. Why? Because I'm going to honor you, God, because that's what you told me to do. This is really, really fascinating. What is Jesus doing here? It's so fascinating. He's establishing a ground level start to his brand new covenant. This old covenant that God established through Moses in the Old Testament, which governed the people of Israel for hundreds, if not thousands of years, Jesus comes along and he says, yeah, I'm starting a new thing. I'm starting a brand new promise, a brand new covenant, and it's going to transform the world. That old covenant that you guys have been reading about for the last thousands of years that you guys have been following, that's done and that's gone. Jesus trumps Moses. That's his last trump card that he throws down. Jesus trumps the Old Testament. Now, this is something that we need to wrestle with as Christians because oftentimes we have a very flat reading of Scripture. Now, what I mean by a very flat reading of Scripture is that we understand we have an Old Testament, we have a New Testament. The Old Testament is what was written before Jesus, and the New Testament is what written after Jesus. And we understand, we believe as Christians, that it is the inspired Word of God. It's inspired by God. But oftentimes what we do is we have a flat reading of Scripture where we place the same emphasis and authority on the Old Testament, the commands of Moses that we did upon Jesus' commandments. Jesus comes along and he says, no, I trump that. My authority is greater than that. So I gave that to you originally, and now I have fulfilled it. Jesus said, I have not come to abolish the law, I've came to fulfill it, which means he didn't show up just to erase it, but he's like, now it's fulfilled. It's like a contract. If you ever write a contract with someone, take out a mortgage, once that contract is fulfilled, it's done away with, right? It's finished. Jesus says, I've come to fulfill the law. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 1, verses 3, it says this about Jesus. It says, he is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature. And he upholds the universe by the word of his power. Jesus shows up. And it says, Jesus is the exact imprint of God. So when we look at Jesus, it's not Jesus is the closest thing that we can find to God. Or it's not Jesus is like God. No, the scriptures tell us, and Jesus says, I'm the exact imprint of God. Exact. In fact, he constantly was saying to his disciples and to people, he's like, when you see me, you see the Father. And the disciples come along, they're like, yeah, we understand. But Jesus, can you show us the Father? Have you ever had that moment with your kids when you tell them something and they keep on asking the same question? You're like, oh my goodness, how do I explain this even better to you? Jesus is like, no, you don't understand it. You're looking at him. Jesus, show us the Father. No, you're looking at him. When you see me, you see the Father. I'm the exact imprint. I'm the exact imprint. So yes, I'm the one who originally gave you that commandment about eating dietary laws. I gave that to you. Now I want you to listen to me. It's done away with. It's done. I'm taking you along a brand new journey now. That's fulfilled. That's fulfilled. Yes, Moses was a prophet and he gave you what you needed at the time period that you had, but now I'm taking you along a brand new journey. I'm taking you along a brand new journey. You guys, for so long you've been caught up with what you do. You've been making sure that you follow all these dietary laws and following all. And I want you to know that it's not what goes into your body that defiles you, you guys. That's not what makes you unclean. It's what comes out of your heart. It's what comes out of your heart. It's interesting, you see the foreshadowing of this even through some of the prophets. There's prophetic sayings, even before Jesus showed up, where God's like, man, your sacrifices disgust me. It kind of came out of the prophets. It was like a foretelling of what Jesus was going to do. Your sacrifices disgust me. Why was God saying that? Because it's like they're so caught up in the religious ritual, they're missing the point. It's like, I'm tired of that religious ritual. I just want your heart. Can I have your heart? Can I have your heart? It's what comes out of your heart that defiles you. And it's really interesting. He starts diving into this. He says, evil thoughts. Man, it's your evil thoughts. Every outward act of sin is preceded by an inward act of choice. Therefore, Jesus begins with the evil thought from which evil action comes. The things that defile you start in your heart. They start in there. There's stuff that's going on. And it eventually is acted out. But it starts in your heart. Then he starts diving in. He's like sexual immorality. Sexual immorality, that one that we don't really want to dive into. Jesus is like, yeah, it starts in your heart, and it starts living out through sexual immorality. The original Greek word that he used is this word called porneia. It's where we get our English word pornography from. The root word of it is actually porneo, which means to sell off. Interesting, hey? So, porneia comes, like our word pornography comes from that, but the root word of it is to sell off. It's this idea of selling off your sexual purity. Selling off your sexual purity. So this idea of sexual immorality that you see that's spoken of, oftentimes we want to narrow it down to very specific stuff, but it's actually very general in the sense of selling off your sexual purity. Jesus was like, man, God originally meant it to be between one man and one woman. This is the way it's meant to be. And Jesus is like, man, it originally starts in your heart and it lives itself out in sexual immorality, that selling yourself off. He talks about theft and murder and adultery and greed, wickedness, deceit. All these things, when he talks about it, it's all about hurting other people. It's all about stuff that happens within you that hurts other people. Man, when you're stealing from somebody, that's hurting them. When you're murdering them, well, that's self-explanatory, isn't it? He's like, adultery, man, you're sleeping around on your spouse. Man, you're hurting that person so deeply. That comes out of your heart as well. Greed. How does greed play itself out? He talks about all this stuff, wickedness and deceit, when you deceive people and lie to people. Man, you're hurting others. That all starts within your heart. He talks about lustful desires and envy. It's this idea of like wanting something that somebody else has. When you lust after someone or you have envy towards them from what they have, man, I really wish I could have that nice house, boat, trailer, whatever it is, there's that lust and envy within your heart. It's desiring something that you don't have that somebody else has. And Jesus speaks into this, says that's going on in your heart and it's eating you alive. It's hurting you. He's like, God cares more about that than whether you wash your hands or eat some bacon. So Jesus is like, man, you know what? Going to have that double cheeseburger. You know that? You know when you go to like Wendy's and there's that Baconator there. He's like, you know what? That's really not good for your physical heart. But go for it because it's not defiling you. That's not a sin. Go ahead and eat that Baconator. He talks about slander and pride. It's this aspect of speaking out against people, slandering people. It's interesting how that's connected to pride, right? Oftentimes we slander people because we're kind of insecure ourselves. And when we say bad stuff about people behind their backs, it kind of like is that sense of building up ourselves and building up our pride. Jesus, like, man, that comes out of your heart. It's so destructive and it's so dark. It's interesting, the last one that Jesus says is this idea of foolishness. This idea of foolishness. Foolishness is this lack of perspective. We wipe aside the things of God and we look at all those things that Jesus just said and we're like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's this lack of perspective of what is harmful towards others, what's harmful for me. You're just foolish. So Jesus is like, man, you know what? Your traditions can get in the way of you misunderstanding what I really care about. I care about your heart. Your traditions can get in the way of other people's needs. About other people's needs. That I care about more than your traditions. And then Jesus takes it that extra mile, doesn't he? He says, it's not just about your traditions. It's time to wipe away the old and start with something new. I'm starting something brand new. Yeah, it was me. I gave you those dietary laws in the past, but it's time to wipe those away now because you know what? It's not what goes into your body and what you eat that defiles you. It's what's in your heart. And the interesting thing is that a lot of the things that Jesus just listed is actual outward actions, right? So it's fascinating because when we focus on our heart and we get our heart right with God, it ends up with an outward action. It affects how we live. It affects what we do. It affects how we treat people. Maybe you're here today and like, your understanding of Jesus, your understanding of faith has been corrupted by religious tradition. It's corrupted by kind of this outward thing. Maybe you've even seen other Christians where it's like it seems like their outward is really more important to them than what's in their heart. And you've wiped away Christianity or faith, or maybe discounted it based on those things. And I think Jesus would speak into that and say, please don't disregard me because of what you've seen in Christianity or religion or whatever. Because I want your heart, I want relationship with you.